Kamenetsky Brothers, Land of Lakers podcast. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, co-host of the Land of Lakers blog, coming to you on Tuesday afternoon, right here near the end of July, Andy.
The 30th, to be exact.
Lots to cover today, including the Lakers filling out the rest of the roster and the newest edition of everyone's favorite segment, Ask a Kamenetsky, or ACK.
ACK!
ACK! Acronym sweeping the nation.
Acronym.
But let's start here, Andy, with a...
See what I did there?
I did. I did see that. With a Facebook comment from our man Phil Luce, who asks a great question that dovetails nicely into our first topic.
It's also a very long question.
That's okay. Settle in. Are the Lakers secretly tanking this season? My opinion, they're distracting the fan base into thinking they're trying to win this year by signing recognizable names, Kame and Young, a young former lottery pick that Lakers fans are always clamoring for, Wesley Johnson, and old favorites that remind them of good times, Farmar, Rambis, maybe Odom. By the way, we'll get to that. Probably not Odom.
But anyway, Madsen as well.
Very good point. I think it's brilliant. The Lakers need to tank this season, but they can't outwardly do it for fear of pissing off Kobe and the fans. So this is the perfect way around it. Sign guys who secretly suck. Is Mitch this brilliant, or does he really think this team can contend?
My favorite part, by the way, of Phil's question is that he said, is he secretly afraid of pissing off Kobe and the fans, Kobe coming first, then the entire, both paying fans, you know, that come to Staples Center, plunk down huge, huge dollars for those tickets, and then worldwide, Kobe, then all of them.
Well, we all know. Most of those people, many of those people, not most, many of those people are actually more concerned about Kobe than they are the team anyway. So that is actually not an unreasonable assumption from our
man, Phil. Overwhelming majority of those people we just talked about would block a bus for Kobe.
It's probably true. But I like the part where he asks two questions at the end. Is Mitch this brilliant, or does he really think this team can contend? I do think he's a pretty brilliant guy and a very good GM. I do not think he really thinks the team can contend, but it does get to a question that was brought up. Mike Bresnahan, the LA Times, great beat writer, spoke to Mitch Kupchak, first big interview he's done, Mitch, not Mike Bresnahan, since Dwight left, Dwight Howard. And one of the things that the big headline that they ran at the Times was the Lakers will not tank. They're going to play to win to the best of their ability. And this raises the question, should they be? I mean, we all know that the Lakers do not have a whole lot of first round picks coming up. They have two in the next four drafts. We know that the 2014 draft is stacked and everybody wants to be high up in it.
Beyond just Andrew Wiggins.
Right. It goes, you know, five or six players deep in terms of guys that people think are high-quality potential all-stars, and that's not the norm in a draft.
Right, and then you've got a bunch of other guys that people think could just be actual run-of-the-mill all-stars.
Right. And so should they be trying to lose as many games as they possibly can in an effort to get the highest possible draft pick for 2014?
Honestly speaking, yeah, they should. I mean, to me, if you look at this team and how they're set up right now, which is – fringe playoff team. They could very well make the playoffs. They could miss.
If everybody, you know, Powell comes back and is ready to start the season, Kobe is able to play relatively quickly and so on and so on, they have enough talent to be a playoff team.
Right. But here's the thing, though. They don't have enough talent to go deep into the playoffs.
I'd be stunned
if they went more than two rounds. I would find that shocking. It would probably mean...
I'd be surprised if they won a first round.
Right. But I'm saying if they went more than two rounds, it would probably mean a whole hell of a lot happened to a bunch of other teams. Then the Lakers really killed it all season. And when you look at, you know, both what this franchise has been about traditionally and also the way the new CBA forces teams, I think, to build, you know, for the future and actually to build dynasties and to build quality teams, it's short-sighted to put aside opportunities to do that, which could come through, you know, moving guys like Power, Jordan Hill, Steve Blake, for assets of any kind.
Okay.
I think it would be short-sighted if you had the opportunity to do that And you don't, because you're thinking about, we're the Lakers and we don't ever play not to compete. I think that's short-sighted.
Okay, now that, see, I think what you're getting at, though, and other people may agree, and we don't need to get into a definitional argument with whether it's you or with the people yelling at their computers. I think what you're talking about there in that last bit is different than tanking. I think trying to trade Pau Gasol for assets for the future is something that I've advocated all summer, is different than saying, let's figure out a way to dump Gasol for anything we can get, even if it's nothing, and just get rid of him. Let's figure out a way to dump all of our players. Let's get nothing but D-leaguers and all these other things to fill out the roster and make us as bad as possible. Dump Jordan Hill, dump Steve Blake. Just get rid of any player that could possibly win a game for you and intentionally really rig the roster to lose. That, to me, is tanking. What I would do, and this has the added benefit of giving you more losses, is try to, at some point this season, flip whatever you can to get whatever you can for the future. Whether, you know, if you can at the trade deadline move Steve Blake for a second round pick and a trade exception, you do that. If you can get something for Pau as the season goes along, I mean, I think people have heard me mention this, the people I've spoken to, and it's not a massive group of people, but some people who know about these things, think that Gasol won't really have any trade value until he establishes it again over the course of the year. He's coming off two surgeries, he's older, and so on and so on. He makes a ton of money. If down the road they can move him, they should. I consider that to be sort of asset management, not a pure tank. But like you said,
well, that, I mean, again, that's just being a good GM. If these guys had,
right,
let me put it this way, if I thought that Hill, Blake, and Gasol, who I think are really the only guys of note who could possibly get traded, you know, just because of who they are, how their contracts are laid out, how much money they cost, all of that. If those guys I thought had no value whatsoever, then I'd say dump them now. I'd say absolutely dump them now and try to lose as many games as possible. But since I think all three, other than maybe Blake, I think Blake's trade value is more or less established. You might want to hang on to him because you could throw him into a deal.
Well, here's the thing. It is now. I think you know exactly what Steve Blake is now.
I think it is now and forever.
Blake, though, is a guy who is the type of player who gains value. I'm not talking goes from, you know, what it is now to, you know, you're going to get a lottery pick for him. But I think as seasons go on, and guys,
I mean,
you know,
if that's the case, you might as well just keep him and re-sign him,
right?
if he's really that good.
But if you know, he's the type of guy who, as the season goes on, because he's a reliable, dependable guy,
sure,
who can probably plug into any team. Somebody who wants to go to the playoffs is going to have their point guard.
Again, my point
turn
is
an ankle.
Though, my point
he gains
is though,
value
that's
is
just
my
the
point.
That's just the difference though between managing assets well and not. My larger point is, if at any point in this season they put competitiveness ahead of rebuilding, I think that's stupid.
I think
it's short-sighted, and it's placating fans that I think, a lot more of them would understand than maybe the front office would give them credit. As much as we get ridiculous, you know, hypothetical trades on Twitter all day, and you clearly get people who don't understand the new CBA, I think a lot more fans understand it now than they did, say, 5 years ago because they had to watch the lockout. They understand how teams need to rebuild. And I think more fans would be understanding than not. But even then, you know what, if they weren't, who cares?
It's not, yeah.
Okay. The seats are already sold, and you can't manage a franchise. You can't run it by trying to placate people for the short term.
The biggest reason I think tanking, like a flat-out tank, doesn't work, and we got a couple other interesting things to talk about with this Mitch interview, and we'll move on here in a second, that I'm assuming Pau will be healthy enough to play. I mean, I don't think he's going to play 82 games, but I think he'll have a good season. I'm assuming Steve Nash will come back and have a good season. Kobe at some point comes back
good
and
season.
Plays.
Not a great season.
Plays
good
well.
Season.
You know, I think when you have that core of guys, you know, Blake, you can't, you know, guys are going to play hard. They're going to try to win and all that. Yeah, it's
so what?
It would be. Let me finish. It's not. I think there's only so. Assuming that happens, there's only so low in the lottery they're going to fall. You know, the pure tank is hard to pull off. The trade your assets tank as the season goes on is something
well,
that
the point is
absolutely
you tank to the degree that is realistic. I mean,
right.
Unless you're going to amnesty Kobe, there is
it's
no
only
way
so bad you can
right, but you can tank. I guess tank to the best of your ability.
What is this saying? Like, to each to his own ability, whatever it is. The last thing that I thought that we both found interesting, because we've spent a lot, we talked about it at length last week, and I've written about it, the notion of whether or not the Lakers would either put pressure on themselves or bow to what will be very intense pressure, because if they don't get the great free agents of 2014, if they go after certain guys and whiff, if Carmelo comes on the market and they don't get him, whatever it might be, everyone's going to start saying, well, my goodness, this just shows the Lakers brand. It's losing its luster. It's all these other things. There would have been a lot of pressure for them, in Jim Buss especially, to kind of restore people's faith in him and his ability to recruit guys and whatever next summer by signing whoever they could get their hands on. Kupchak told Bresnahan, lots of confidence in LA as a destination spot. We fully believe that people will come here and all these other things. But, quote, you have to look beyond next year. You can't say we have all this flexibility and we're going to use it all next year. I don't know if you're going to be able to use it for a free agent or a trade or to sign back Power Kobe. We're in the position where we can sit down at the end of the year and look and see what's best for the organization.
Yes!
That is the best thing I've heard anybody in the front office say since the end of the season.
And you know what? It's also, seeing Mitch say that, it reminded me of a point that I think is worth making, because it hasn't been made a whole lot, if at all. This narrative of the Lakers reloading immediately in 2014, that, you know, they were going to use that cap space, you know, everyone's contracts come off the books. It's a one-off.
Hang out with us for 1 year and we'll get this fixed.
That has been much more of a media narrative and a fan narrative than anything the front office has explicitly said.
Right.
There's been inferences at most, and they've made it clear that they are looking for that offseason to start the rebuild process. But they have never actually explicitly stated the, you know, locked and reloaded nearly the way the narrative has been drawn
out.
That's
hadn't done. But what they hadn't done at any point, you know, and they've been asked about it plenty, is dissuade people from that. And that's what I think is important about this, is it's at least, unless I'm missing something, I don't think we are, it's the first time I've heard either Mitch or Jim Buss or somebody say it's not, you know, that this rebuilding project could go into the summer of 2015, which, by the way, is fine, because then you start getting into younger free agents who make more sense at a max deal and all these other things. And it's more important to do it correctly.
Absolutely.
Than it is to do
There's
it
no
fast.
My point is, though, the idea that they were going to go at it come hell or high water, that's been much more of media and, I think, fans by extension reading tea leaves and maybe putting out of what they expect to happen than anything the front office is actually explicitly
said. Right, but like
said.
I said, I mean, you get concerned until you start to hear what the map might be.
No, that's been the biggest concern of mine, Brian, is that they actually would potentially, at least, I've had some confidence in them, but potentially feel like they've got to grab the two biggest names they can get that'll actually come on board, and that's a terrible mistake.
All right, Andy, the Lakers are making moves. The wheeling and dealing continues, Andy. As you know, most of us have been sitting around going, Lakers got to get themselves. I mean, I don't know why they haven't signed Elias Harris to a long-term deal yet.
He's out there.
Why have they not done that? Well,
undrafted free agents
Gonzaga. They did sign. The Lakers filled, technically speaking, the 12th spot on the roster, but Andy, it will be really, for all intents and purposes, it's the 13th, assuming Ryan Kelly's second round pick gets signed. So they are at the minimum. They can start the season. They have 13 players. Elias Harris, undrafted, played well at the Summer League. Neither one of us know anything about him.
Not a thing.
I watched 5 minutes, maybe, of Summer League ball. I found it boring.
I watched about 30 minutes, but it was very scattered, and I often was paying no attention.
Is he good?
No idea.
Don't know. Played well. Put up some good numbers. People seem to like him.
I do know this,
Shot Brian. The ball well for his first couple seasons at Gonzaga, and then it was like 17%
his senior year. Gonzaga for a little while. He's had an unusual career. He was a very, very, from what I've read, highly touted prospect when he entered college.
Right, his college career went sort of the
inverse
opposite
of what you
would hope. He had much better as a freshman and kind of went, but again, what we're talking about here, like it was with somebody like Farmar, like it was with Wes Johnson, to a lesser extent, Nick Young, because he's somebody who's more likely to cash in on a good year and go somewhere else. Are guys who, in theory, are young enough to stick with the team through the rebuild. Odds are Elias Harris is not going to turn out to be a great NBA player or even a rotation player or whatever. But he's 24 years old. He's a big body who plays with energy and all these other things. And he makes much more sense than Michael Petras would have, or somebody that people have heard of to come fill the spot. And so did they choose the right undrafted free agent? I have no flipping clue.
But I don't really know. I mean, for the most part, there's really no such thing as choosing the wrong undrafted free agent.
Because if they were that good, they would have been drafted.
As well as, say, the Spurs, who I think are the gold standard when it comes to mining these guys that you've never heard of or finding guys who fit perfectly when they washed out with their first team. You know, you take a guy like Danny Green.
Sure.
They did a great job, I think, identifying him and then staying with him after a year where he did pretty much nothing. But I guarantee.
But they also had cut him. They also had cut
him. They cut him. I guarantee.
They brought him back, but
they are surprised that Danny Green has come along the way they have. What we do know for sure, Brian, is that the potential for electric chemistry in the third string front court with former teammates Elias Harris and Robert Sacre could be through the roof.
I mean, that is going to be magic.
They could own. Magic. The Lakers could own garbage time this season. Yeah, oh, and there may be a lot of garbage time.
We're going to get to see more of that combination than I think any of us would like.
We'll be calling it Hakare. It's going to be so exciting.
Saris? That sounds like a disease.
Hakare.
I like Hakare.
Hakare.
Saris definitely sounds like something you contract. Like...
You need a prescription for Saris. Right.
Did you get him immunized for Saris before you went off to Uganda or whatever it might be?
Yeah, you know? I told you, man. You mess around with that chick, you're going to end up with some Saris.
The move does basically, I think we can all agree, close the door, though, on the possibility of bringing back Lamar Odom, something that certainly some of the more sentimental fans were hoping would happen. And what strikes me about that, because both of us agree he has no real utility on this team. It doesn't matter if he makes him a game or two better. We're talking about a guy who 2 years ago was the sixth man of the year and widely considered one of the best subs in the league, one of the most versatile players.
One of the best teammates in the entire league.
Just a phenomenally useful player, borderline all-star, if not somebody who maybe should have made that. 2 years later, because he's not signing with the Clippers, there's no space there. He's not signing with the Lakers. Doesn't appear he's going to Miami. Maybe somebody picks him up. Maybe not. I don't know. 2 years later, nobody knows where he's going to play. He could be out of the league. Lamar Odom could be out of the league.
And he's also, too, Brian, one of those guys that if he's not signed with a team at the beginning of the season, I think it's pretty much guaranteed he's not going to play because Lamar Odom is not somebody, and we love Lamar, that I think most GMs are going to count on to stay in shape.
Oh God, no.
throughout the season. So maybe they pick him up in April for part of a playoff run.
He's not Derek Fisher.
No,
right.
Derek Fisher.
Thunder will not be picking up Odom.
Of Derek Fisher's skills at age 48, however old he is, the guy is a rock. He stays in shape. Lamar Odom is a shade softer than rock.
The way this has happened has been, as you follow it along, I know we were talking about this earlier today, and it's when you follow Lamar over the last couple of years, the idea that he might not be playing at this point isn't overwhelmingly surprising because he was very open about how he didn't want to play the lockout year. Like he was hoping, he was like the only NBA guy who actively hoping.
People forget as much as being traded to the Mavericks, first to the Hornets, then the Mavericks threw him for an emotional loop and, he wanted to leave. He was speaking a lot out of anger. He had the offseason from hell leading up to that with even more death, in his family and his cousin who had died. And then the weird accident that took a kid's life, I believe, on the way to the funeral. Mm-hmm. And just Lamar has had so much death in his life. And I've actually talked with him about that really threw him into a depressing tailspin that I don't think most people ever really recognize. They really took it more as just him pouting and being unprofessional. And he was unprofessional with Dallas, and he'll admit it. but there was a lot more going on
sure.
with that that I think made him question still to this day how much he wants to play.
And you look at it now, and I remember when he first did, you know, got married to Khloe Kardashian and all these other people were expecting the end of the universe, and it worked out actually really well. I mean, and when I say really well, I mean Khloe and that relationship was initially quite good for him, and in terms of how he handled his personal life and all these other things we don't need to get into. But now, whether it's the same, whether it's different, whether he's actually, you know, he's just been in the tabloids and we haven't paid attention to, it's one thing when you're in the tabloids for one reason or another, you have a reality show when you're the sixth man of the year. Now you look at it and teams are, and you can look at, I'm sure the Lakers looked at it when they were kicking the tires on Lamar. And then all of a sudden he's on TMZ smashing a paparazzi's equipment. And then he's on the cover of Star and the $67 million divorce or whatever it was. And all these other things. Now it's like, all right, really, is this really what we need to be getting into for this guy who was, you know, a sub replacement player for the last couple seasons, or, you know, below average player of the last couple seasons? It's just not worth it anymore. That's how far this guy has fallen. It's sad, and it's, if you look at it through that prism of a couple years ago, it's just incredible. All right, Andy, we have reached that point in the show. It's ACK time.
ACK!
ACK!
Ask a Kamenetsky.
Let's cue up the music and get going. Andy, first question.
The first comes from at Ton Slingdog, our friend Todd Robert Anderson, good friend of both of ours in real life. Going to give him a quick plug. He is a member of the group The Film Pigs. You can follow them on Twitter, at Film Pigs. You can see their show at Geek Nation. And if you look at the latest episode, I make a cameo in it.
Ooh, actually, well that's a good reason to go.
You will see me in it, exactly. At Cam Brothers, if I want to become a sports fan in order to better fit into society, which sport should I start with? Todd is not a sports fan.
He is not. He's not somebody who knows about sports. I highly recommend lacrosse.
Polo.
We could so lead him astray. And everybody's talking about polo, Todd.
Todd, have you looked into dressage?
Right.
That will make you
that's
a man
right,
of the people.
Todd, horse ballet. That's what everybody loves. The answer is obvious. It's football. And this works on a couple levels for you, Todd. First, it's the most popular sport in the country, so you're always going to be able to find people to bond with over football. The second, and I think you'll appreciate this, it's also the most low-maintenance sport. Because they really, you know, yes, there are Thursday games, yes, there's Monday games. You only really need to gear up for one day a week. So one day of game watching plus one afternoon of prep to kind of get yourself up to speed with what's going on. That's really all you need to invest in it to be able to fit in with society generally.
It's also the shortest season in terms of actual time spent throughout a calendar year attempting to get into football. There's also the fantasy football element, which is something that now is a big part, I think, of society, even among, I think, casual football
fans. Right, and
if
you find yourself in a position,
they all get into a league.
If you find yourself in a position where you have to play fantasy football, and I don't think you'll like it, it is the easiest fantasy football, fantasy league to maintain.
It would also be nice for Todd, too, I think, if the Super Bowl started to have more meaning for him than beyond just the commercials, snark towards musical acts, and just general snark on Twitter.
Right. So if you can't find some dressage, definitely.
If you don't have the loose change around to train a horse to do ballet, NFL.
And who doesn't in these tough economic times? Second question, at Andy Heil.
Did not help.
Excuse, I'm sorry, this is from Facebook, actually. Andy Heil asks, can true Laker fans be blamed for not reading Simmons, meaning Bill Simmons, of Grantland, trenchant analysis simply because of his ceaseless sniping at the purple and gold? Basically, is it okay for Lakers fans to completely ignore anything Bill Simmons says because he doesn't like the Lakers?
Yeah, I think they can be blamed for that because that's kind of stupid. By Andy Heil's own admission, Simmons' NBA analysis is often trenchant. And say what you want about Bill Simmons, he is passionate about the NBA.
And knows his stuff.
He knows his stuff and he loves it. Why deprive yourself of something trenchant and something that could be useful for you as an NBA player because he hates the Lakers? I mean, who cares? Yeah, don't take this personally.
Completely agree. Next question.
Yeah, but seriously, put on your big boy pants. Put on your pantalones de macho.
Si!
Next question. Next question from at Steve Nash Cronny, the Steve Nash Chronicles. If you could somehow combine Chris Kaman and Wayne Gretzky, which Kamenetsky brother would the creature most closely resemble?
I do appreciate you referring to that as a creature.
I think it should be prefaced, by the way, Brian, there is no right answer to a question this weird.
I do occasionally get, you know, the whole Chris Kamen thing. I've never heard anybody say that you look a lot like Wayne Gretzky, so I'm not exactly sure how that fits in. You used to have longer flowing hair, which Wayne Gretzky once had.
As did Chris Kamen.
Yeah, that's true. No, Kamen's hair was never flowing. It was long and stringy.
It was more
and
Hulk Hogan-y.
And disgusting.
Yeah.
He had awful hair.
Yeah, I did. Man, I used to have good hair.
I would say...
Great hair, I'd go so far as to say.
Man, that is a really tough... I would say, first of all, this creature should immediately be shot, whatever it is. If you
probably
see it.
Probably by Chris Kamen.
Right, if he's capable. If he has the guns. If you see it.
If.
Walking around. I'm saying if you see this thing walking around, kill it. Put it out of its misery. But probably a little bit me. I guess it's more genetically dominant.
It's not a little more to you, Brian. It's actually a lot more.
Okay.
When you break it down. Wayne Gretzky played hockey.
I played hockey
in high school and college. I never did. When we both had hair, your hair was closer in color to Chris Kamen.
That's true.
So your hair resembled his more. My hair is darker than yours. You are the relatively better basketball player between us. You are the relatively better center at 5'9 versus 5'8. You're a little heavier than I am.
Bulk.
And
bulk down low.
When it comes to the weaponry that we associate with Chris Kamen, we're both equally useless. So I think you're actually much closer.
I compliment you for expanding the definition of resemble beyond simple appearance. I didn't do it. You did a much better job answering this
question. Well, it is a weird question, Brian, as I said.
Last question from at J.A. Denarian, Jomi Adenarian. Whatever says,
not gonna
work here anymore. Dougie or Cat Daddy? I assume this is some sort of
reference to the dances that Kate Upton has made.
Yeah, see, I had a little of a disadvantage here because I knew the Dougie thing. I did not know what a Cat Daddy was. I assumed it was some sort of dance.
But it turned out you knew, you just didn't know.
Well, what's it called? What does Miley Cyrus do?
Twerking.
Twerking. Yeah. I thought maybe it might be twerking.
She is, by the way, obsessed with twerking at the moment. The answer, Brian, is the Cat Daddy because it requires more body. You got to put a little more...
Like twerking.
You got to put a little more oomph into what you're doing.
Like twerking.
As Kate Upton showed, you can teach people how to do the Dougie while sitting. You cannot teach people how to Cat Daddy while sitting. And it's dirtier sounding, Cat Daddy, which I think matters.
I have since gone back and looked at that video, which I had seen. I'm not making this number up. 17 million other people had. I have actually seen Kate Upton Cat Daddy and just didn't take the time to learn.
That's what I said.
Right, but I didn't take the time to learn it had a name.
Did it really matter?
No. Could have been named Steve, and I wouldn't have cared. I will say this. I will take up for the Dougie. Because, like you said, she was sitting. It was in a different situation. So I bet if you put her in a bikini, front-facing to the camera, and had her do it again, I'm not saying Cat Daddy wouldn't win because you know, like you say, this is very important, Cat Daddy sounds dirty. But Dougie...
It is a full-body dance.
I think there may be more. All I'm saying is it wasn't a fair fight.
If nothing else... Kate Upton
was not a fair fight.
She did demonstrate just how sexy teaching somebody how to Dougie can be, because the most famous version of that video, you hear Arash Markazi giggling the entire time in the background, and it's still hot.
Yeah.
Even with Arash's giggle in the background.
Which is not hot. Arash has among the least sexy giggles I've ever heard. It's girlish.
That was my attempt at the Arash
giggle. It's not the least girlish giggle I've ever heard. And I'm including girls, but it is definitely the least sexy.
Arash, our pal. By the way, Kate Upton owes him a little chunk of change, something.
That was a big deal.
Big part of her lineage.
All right, so that is the end of Ask a Kamenetsky. People can come back next week for more of that. Please make sure to submit your questions when we put out the request over Twitter at Cam Brothers or on our Facebook page, Kamenetsky Brothers. So, about it. Andy, anything else you can think of for this week's show?
No, I'm good.
All right, we'll see everybody next time.
See you.